And away we go here on a midweek Wednesday morning on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Glad you're along for this 21st day of October 2020. JR, Simmer, and Hammer. And it's going to be a bit of a mixed bag today. It's going to be kind of wet. We've got some showers off and on pretty much throughout the entire day. But it is going to be really warm and windy as well. So we got showers, windy, warm today. High of 17. Normal high for this time of year is around 10 or 11, so significantly warmer than it usually is. Tomorrow, cloudy and 13. Friday still looks like a fantastic day, like an out of the blue, likely the last really super nice day we're going to get. Mostly sunny and 21 on Friday, and then it's really going to cool off on the weekend. A high of 8 on Saturday and just 5 on Sunday. And as you wake up this morning, it is 5 degrees as we say good morning to Sean Simpson. How are you this morning, Simmer?
I'm good. And, yeah, I was just looking at that forecast. My app, whatever I have, has a little 22 on Friday. And, yeah, a little something to kind of look forward to, trying to get outside and get some exercise with the old gym closed right now. So certainly enjoy that. I hate running outside, and I hate when it's cold, but I got to buckle up here.
You got to, my friend.
Yeah.
You're headed into the... Well, whatever. The abyss.
Yeah.
The abyss. The abyss that is November.
Yeah.
Which is never nice at the best of
times. No. At least we get some sunshine. My time that I spent in Russia, or when I used to travel and you go up to Helsinki in November, already a lot of darkness. And then when I was in Belarus, it was just basically from, I'd say, October till about May, it was just this cloud cover. You never saw the sun, and not a whole lot of fun, and another reason why they invented vodka.
Amongst many?
Oh, yeah. But it was. It was a grind of winter to go through something like that, where, like I said, I'll take a little cold day as long as there's a little sunshine out there.
There you go. Now, how many, I'd be interested to know, because you go to the liquor store here, there are many, many, many versions of vodka.
Yeah.
Different flavors of vodka, etc. How many would they have in Russia? Which, when I think of vodka, I think of that as the home of vodka.
Well, yeah, it is now.
Do they have liquor stores there? Are you bootlegging it?
No,
what are you doing?
No, they have, you know, where I lived, just thinking of Belarus, the way everything's set up in Europe generally, you get off of the bus stop or the tram stop, and you usually have a little store right there, right? You'll have a bakery, you have a flower shop. And then you'll have to have your grocery store. Most people shop because, you know, kind of day to day. And I think everything was available in there. I don't remember, because it's funny. I think at the grocery store, I always bought a little wine, and there was a restaurant that I liked. But no, it very similar to here, I guess, to summarize it. As far as how many variations, what you have is lots of different variations. What you have is it's very cheap, too. I've always thought the term in Russia and Belarus, this is basically their way to medicate society.
Gotcha.
So they make it extremely cheap to buy some of it.
There you go. Yeah. Hey, keep the people inebriated so that they're not that wise.
Yeah.
All good. All right. Well, let's see here. If you are having a birthday today, you are sharing it with... Yeah, Manfred Mann. Manfred Mann is 80 years old today.
Okay.
Remember Blinded by the Light?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Now, I actually thought that was the name of the band. Did not realize that was an actual person. But, oh, yeah, boy, that was a classic right there.
Yep. Still touring his one song?
Oh, yeah?
No, I don't know.
Okay, yeah.
Think Manfred Mann's still doing the fall fairs in whatever area he's from?
No, yeah. I would think indoors. I'm thinking casinos.
Oh, okay.
I'm thinking he's hitting any...
Hello, Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Exactly.
I got a song for you, Blinded by the Light. I'm going to start with it, and I'm going to end with it.
Yeah.
Because that's the only reason you're here to watch me.
Who wants to hear the new tracks first?
And also fun to get into music discussions, and I guess a sign of my girlfriend being younger than me. I was trying to explain to her who Debbie Gibson and her rival singer was.
Tiffany?
And how they actually sang in malls. That's where most of their videos were made. And I felt, well, that's a bit weird there that I remember this. And then I think it was Monica and Brandy, I think, ended up coming out later as far as a rival. But
wow.
Do you remember that classic, terrible music between those two?
I remember Debbie Gibson. I do not remember whatever the other ones. I've heard their names, but I don't remember them being as big.
Yeah. Well, they
I
was
tried
just...
to actually just expunge that all from my mind.
Oh,
actually.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot of clutter up there at the best of times with arbitration hearings and obscure sports numbers. So I don't need to remember about Debbie Gibson's time in a mall.
No, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see here. Thomas Edison, 141 years ago today in 1879, turned on the first working light bulb.
Yeah.
It burned out after 40 hours.
Yeah.
So there you go. Where would we be without, and we go from blinded by the light to the invention of the light bulb.
Yeah. And
the same day.
As we get into a little history here, which I'll explain, he actually got lucky, though, because most of the inventions that he took as far as the actual power power grid he took from Tesla. Are you familiar with any of that background, JR?
Not really.
Okay, the actual power grid that Edison and Furt put together was very archaic. It didn't have the AC-DC basically model. Power just ran around and then it basically ran out. So you had to find a way to continue to do this. The grids for cities were very small, and it was Tesla's invention that came in. And Tesla worked for Edison for years, then left, went different places. What he never did, should have had Eric Macromello back in the day, he never patented anything. So a big part of the fortune that was made by the Edison company was off of the work Mr. Tesla.
So now you know the rest of the story.
Well, it's funny because the vehicle has become very popular, and if you're into history, into those types of things, this guy was an absolute genius. If you go back to, I think, Croatian born, but inventing from a very young age, and yeah, a worthwhile watch right now, as there's not a whole lot going on sports wise.
On this day 28 years ago, Madonna's book Sex came out.
That was in the cellophane wrapper. You could not see through it.
That's right. $49.95. Like people nowadays, like kids today, would go, "What the hell
for a book?" Yeah,
for a book of Madonna doing some sort of coy nudies, yeah. And wasn't Vanilla Ice in there for when she
was
dating
really?
Vanilla Ice?
Well, she was her and Noel Messier were dating for a little bit, right? That
I
was
think
all
she
the rage.
Dated quite a few.
Oh yeah,
men,
why wouldn't you?
Well known
hey,
men.
Why wouldn't you?
Well,
I mean,
exactly.
Hey, get out there and enjoy it. Her music. Saw her in concert in D.C. one time. I'll tell you what, sure puts on a hell of a show. And even trying to brand herself, you think mid-80s and Like a Virgin and all the songs that came out then. Not a ton of talent, but sure worked hard at it and was married for a long time to the movie producer.
Sean Penn.
No, after that. Guy Ritchie.
Penn, yeah, and then Guy Ritchie,
yeah. Sean Penn, you remember originally, but Guy Ritchie, they had a little custody battle going on a couple of years ago where
Vanilla.
She wanted the son to be in New York and he wanted to live over in London with dad.
Gotcha. Vanilla Ice was in some of those pictures with Madonna.
Well, he had about a 6 month period there where he's pretty famous.
He's,
right?
He's kind of circled back, though. Like, you'll see him appear.
Robbie
and stuff.
Van Winkle.
Yeah.
Is that not his real name?
Oh, absolutely. One of the greatest spoof videos of all time is Jim Carrey on In Living Color and does the whole spoof on the song. It's incredible. But that song, and this is when I was just turning pro down in Baltimore. If you want to listen to that, you had to listen in your car. The veteran players would not allow that in the dressing room because it was a steal off of course, the Queen song. It's like, do not play that. We'd be in the car just bouncing to it. Any club you went too. There were guys that were dressing up looking like him, and if you could pull off the dance at the time. And then he was trying to pretend that he was had born and, you know, had kind of grown up in the hood, right?
Yes.
And then people realized, no, you're actually from a rich part of Houston, and it kind of all caved in. But boy, you see him once in a while in some movies and hasn't changed a lot.
Does he not have a Reno show on
he
HGTV?
Does. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, where he's doing backyards.
Is he still known as Ice Ice Baby?
I think still Vanilla
I think he goes
Ice.
With that, yeah. But he hasn't changed much. I mean, he's still pretty good
still
shape.
Still got the updo with the hair.
Crazy. Yeah, he's actually pretty jacked, too. He's got quite a few of the tats going. But like I said, he almost was away, and they made fun of him for so long that just another one of those characters that's circled back and been in some movies.
Yeah. All right, kids, you could ignore the last 5 minutes. That's way too much information on Vanilla Ice. One thing I did watch last night, I watched a little bit of the World Series.
Yeah.
But I did watch the ESPN documentary, which aired on TSN, The Life and Trials of Oscar Pistorius.
Okay.
You did not watch it.
No.
Well,
and
you're
know
all
what?
Fired up
no,
to watch it last
I,
night.
I was, actually, and then got a little sidetracked and ended up, and then I saw it this morning. It was running again. Is it a four-parter, JR?
It is four. So it's going to air over the next four Tuesday nights. Last night's episode was 2 hours. I was thinking it was only going to be an hour because I was like, okay, I'll watch this and then I'll just flip into the baseball game. It'll be the second inning or whatever. It'll be all set. And then I actually click on it on guide and it's like, oh, it's 2 hours. Yeah. But it was good. It was really, really good. And it starts because they got it. These documentaries have to grab you right away, right? They can't go. Well, if we're talking about Oscar Pistorius, Oscar Pistorius grew up as a young lad, you know, and of course we know the best. Well, for a lot of people, that would be a tune-out. So you got to start, you got to grab people right away. So they grab, it goes right to the night of when he murdered his girlfriend and kind of goes to, and most of the first hour spent on that. Then it goes back to taking you back to his childhood, how he grew up,
his relationship
with his mother, et cetera.
Yeah. What is the background with his leg chair? Was it illness, accident, that he actually lost his
I think he was born with.
Oh, he was. Something.
And they had to amputate his legs.
Okay.
He had, I believe, deformity within the feet.
Oh, okay.
I believe it ended up being so. But it was an interesting life growing up. And then they kind of circled back to
the trial. So they kind of go current or during the trial and then go back into periods of his life or whatever. But they got the thing that makes these documentaries really good is, and whether they work or not for me, is the amount of access they have to people who were part of it at the time.
Yeah.
So they talk to his brother. They talk to, and I'm not sure where some of this footage could be from a previous documentary that may have aired in South Africa. I'm not quite sure, but they had access to the dad, to the father. There was a very, very moving clip with him. There is Oscar Pistorius's aunt is a big part of it as well. So, and then obviously the prosecutors, the defense people, the police, various eyewitnesses, etc. Like they went to great lengths to make sure it's a well rounded out documentary. It was really, really good. I was kind of like, well, you know, I kind of know the story.
Yeah.
It is an interesting story, obviously, for a bunch of different reasons. Most people, everybody listening right now, would be familiar at the time. It was a huge story. That was 2013, 7 years ago. But I'm kind of thinking, well, I'll give it an hour. But it was really good, really good. So highly recommended. I'm not sure if they're gonna re-air part one. You can find it on demand. TSN's got all their great docs, either their own or from ESPN, as part of a kind of a documentary vault, which you can find online. So I would highly recommend watching it. But yeah, it's going to air over the next four Tuesday nights, I believe, or I'm guessing that each episode is 2 hours long.
Yeah, and coming just at the right time, maybe lead us right into the Masters. And I know at that time, Eric McCormella had a ton of coverage on it, and kind of remembering back, JR, of course, he was found guilty. It was a light sentence that he was given initially, right? That there pressure from the public or whatever to reopen it, and he was retried or resentenced? I don't know, and actually, if I've kind of never even really followed it since, but just remember Eric's reaction to understanding the difference of the different laws from country to country, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so in lieu of there being a lot of sports last night, that was one of the things that drew some people in, but there was one big thing, and that, of course, was Game 1 of the World Series, which went to the L.A. Dodgers. We'll come back. We'll talk about that. We'll get into the hockey news. We now have 4 of the 5 scheduled arbitration hearings for this week for the NHL have now been settled ahead of the hearings actually taking place, as the Leafs and Ilya Mikheyev got into a deal last night. That leaves just one. That would be the Sens and Connor Brown, scheduled to have their hearing tomorrow. The two sides exchanged numbers yesterday. We'll get into that. And are they going to be able to head off an arbitration hearing, which, again, if it gets to it and it actually happens, that means whatever number that the arbitrator decides on is the number that they have to settle on, A, and B, could lead to a potential divorce between the player and the team. We'll have to see on that. All right, we'll get into all of that. We'll get into some football news, this day in sports history. We're going to talk to Pierre Maguire, of course. James Boyd, general manager of the 67s, will join us as well. There has been an outbreak of COVID-19 in relation to the Ottawa 67s. So we're going to get the latest from the team's general manager, James Boyd, will join us later on in the show as well. So we got a busy Wednesday ahead, some winning for you as well, our Pizza for a Year contest. So stand by, all that on the way next here on TSN 1200. Certificates and you're into the grand prize draw of Pizza for a Year. If you are one of our 5 qualifiers from yesterday, stand by just after 7. We will award our daily prize from yesterday. All right, let's start with the World Series. Game 1 last night between the Dodgers and the Rays. Neutral site game being played at the new $1.2 billion Globe Life Park in Arlington, Texas. This game was scoreless into the fourth inning when...
Look back by Glass now with a first pitch swing and a high fly ball. Right center field. It is well hit. Kiermaier back. It's gone. He hit it into the Dodger bullpen. And Cody Bellinger has given the Dodgers a 2-0 lead.
He is, of course, was the hero of Game 7 with the game-winning home run versus National League Championship Series versus Atlanta. And Cody Bellinger starts the scoring with another home run in the World Series. And, of course, infamously, after hitting the home run the other night, dislocated his shoulder. Had to go into the training room to pop it back in, was able to finish the game. But everybody's like, yeah, you know what, Cody? You know what? Can you just celebrate with a little less enthusiasm? So I thought it was great. As he crosses home plate, he actually taps toes with the guy in the on-base circle. A couple of players come out of the dugout. Then he goes into the dugout. So I thought that was a kind of a very, very fun moment.
Yeah, and ended up having the catch finishing off the game, so he looked okay and got it mid-air. I don't know what it is about that fella. It makes me feel old. When I look at him, there's times where I see athletes.
And just in summer, you are old.
I know, yeah. But he just looks so bloody young. I'm like, that's a kid right there. But hey, nice performance by him. Certainly nice to see Kershaw. A lot of pressure, a lot of negativity, and he came in, and after a struggle in the first inning, only allowed one run in six innings, and was outstanding, really the story of the game.
Yeah, eight strikeouts for Kershaw. He was excellent in command, only allowed two hits and the one run, as you mentioned, the home run. Here's Clayton Kershaw on winning game one.
It's awesome. I mean, it's great to get this series going with a win. You know, that's the biggest thing, you know, for us is to get going, get that first game. It's always important to get that first game of a series, and just for me personally, it's awesome, you know, to get to pitch well and get a win in a World Series. Like you said, I'm just thankful for another opportunity.
Well documented, and we've talked about his postseason struggles going into last night's game. Highest ERA in Major League Baseball history of any pitcher who has pitched 100 innings or more. I'm guessing he probably, after last night, probably doesn't hold the record any longer. Yeah. But that evens his. Here's the weird thing. His record now in the playoffs in his career with the win last night is now 12-12. His record in the regular season is 175 wins and 76 losses. So this just kind of shows you. Now, you face better competition. I understand in the playoffs.
Sure. Yeah.
But that the wide divergence in regular season Clayton Kershaw and postseason Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah.
But he was outstanding last
night.
Yeah,
and hey, 12-12, do you have 24 decisions in the playoffs, JR? It's pretty good, is it not? Like, you get into some of these comparisons of, you know, guys going to multiple Super Bowls. Well, hey, not many guys in football as a quarterback. How many wins does it take? Hey, you've had 24 decisions, and at the right time, in the right spot, and I don't know how many more. Would he just get one more start, do you think? Or they would ever try to mix him in for games 4 and 7 with the spacing?
Well, he would at best pitch game 5,
game
probably,
five. Okay.
Right? If they
okay.
want to go on
okay.
regular rest,
yeah.
And I think that's what the Dodgers are going to do, because they're going with a bullpen game tonight. Then they'll do Bueller in game 3.
Tight pants action.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I think Kershaw 5. And then he would be able to probably come in and throw some innings in a game 7 if it got that far.
Yeah, game. Athlete like that. Not that I know any of the real background, but got to admit, I'm just cheering for him. Any of these guys that have to face this and the negativity, and he keeps coming back. And boy, like I said, after, was it 21 pitches in the first inning yesterday? And looked a little bit wild, and then all of a sudden just settles in, and pretty tight match there. And then the fourth of the fifth, they get some runs for him, and he taking home the W.
Yeah, on the offensive side of things, Cody Bellinger, you heard the home run right there. Mookie Betts, though, was the story, both with the long ball. He hits a home run last night, but also with his legs. Two hits, two stolen bases in the game last night, and that's what really broke the game open. And so they got the two runs in the fourth on that home run. Then the fifth, they got four runs, and that was all Mookie Betts. He walks, he steals second, he steals third, and then he comes home on a grounder to first base in which he beats the throw home.
Yeah.
So he did that. Like, you think about that. Like, literally, there wasn't a hit. There wasn't a hit. It was a walk, a stolen base, and he comes in on a ground out. And it was all on his legs and his brain, basically.
Yeah.
But that's what Mookie Betts can do.
And I hope I'm accurate on this stat as I'm doing my incredible prep work in the room watching the TV before I come on. He is the first person in the same ending of a World Series to have a hit and a stolen base since Babe Ruth. Now, I guess how often
walk and two stolen bases. Yeah.
Oh, man, hammer? Okay. Well, anyways. And I just thought, okay, that's one of those very obscure stats.
It's still a great stat.
Oh, anything that ties you with Babe Ruth, let's go with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. By the way, as well, Mookie Betts responsible for keeping a lot of Americans not only happy but fat, as his stolen base won free tacos for America. Taco Bell's annual Steal a Base, Steal a Taco promotion. If there was a stolen base in game one, America gets a free taco.
And there was one previous Taylor, but then it was called back from a stolen base
to a wild pitch.
So then America groaned, God, I need my taco.
How are we going to get our Taco Bell? Exactly.
That is unbelievable when you think of a giveaway, right? And you had, what was it, the fella in Houston had, was it the furniture company?
Yes.
Where if the Astros won the World Series, you didn't have to pay your bill? Isn't that what it ended up being?
Correct.
Lost millions and millions. And the Taco Bell, I know it's only one taco, but on a population of 350 million, I guess you assumption is most Americans ain't going with one taco, right?
Exactly.
When I roll in there and
I roll for
three and four, I just, if you want to say there should be a run on toilet paper, though, they'd be jamming up the can of Taco Bell. So I'd be ready.
And you only have a week to cash in your tacos.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah,
okay.
It's not endless, so you got a
what
week.
What was the big thing here in Ottawa? They called it the pizza line. Now, four or five goals since had to score?
It was five goals, and then the pizza line was so successful, they moved it up to six.
Oh, okay.
Six goals. Yeah. If the Sens, any game in which the Sens scored six goals or more, was free slice of pizza.
Okay.
I think it was pizza,
okay.
Right?
Yeah. Okay.
I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 So that was the promotion back in the day. Now they've got, the last of the goal in the last minute, there's a McDonald's
deal.
Yeah,
you get a Big Mac.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So
the next day, not after the game, so you can't go clog up Terry Fox and Hazeldine.
When's the last time you guys fired down a Big Mac?
Oh, it's been a long time.
I'm going 25 years. I'm a two hamburger, large fry, and a Coke, and I only eat McDonald's probably once a year. But now that you actually say that, though, it actually sounds kind of tasty, Hammer, now that you mention
you
the little Big Mac.
Big Macs are terrible.
That secret Thousand Island sauce.
Yeah, I've participated in many McHappy Days, which is a great cause that McDonald's supports, and they do lots of great work, but having worked in the back and seen the giant vat of special sauce goes on the Big Mac, there's nothing wrong with
it.
It's just
a lot of it.
Well, they sell
a lot of Big Macs.
I know, but it's just when it comes out of a little tube and you squeeze stuff on, like
it makes that weird sound.
I can wrap my head around that. I can't wrap around the giant tub of it, though. I just look at it and I go, I don't know why, but that part just sticks in my
mind. How long is this supposed to last for? This is
I also wonder.
You're going to have McDonald's.
Well,
sauce.
And when they even came up with that concept, because you watch the Founder movie. And that's so cool about the original location, how much time they put into the whole process of turning it into fat food. And at that time, keep it simple. I think the only thing they offered...
You just called it fat food?
No, fast food. Maybe I did, yeah. It is that too.
Makes sense.
But it was just hamburgers, Coke, and a drink. You could throw everything away, right? And their big thing was the milkshakes, whether they should use real ice cream or how size of a mixer you should end up having. And I wonder what year the old Big Mac actually got introduced.
Anyway, Dodgers take game one, 8-3. Game two will go tonight. The Rays are throwing Blake Snell, of course, won the Cy Young a couple of years ago. And the Dodgers are going with a bullpen game tonight. So, both teams went to seven games. But the Dodgers ended up going a day later, right? So the day less rest for what could have been a potential start for one of their starting pitchers. So they're going to keep Walker Buehler on his regular rest, so he will play. He will pitch in Game 3 on Friday. So Game 2 goes tonight. Dodgers up 1-0. I see that Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, spoke yesterday, as most commissioners do, on the eve of the World Series. Here he is talking about, will 2021, the season, start on time?
Our plan is to start on our regular schedule. We've issued a schedule for next year. But I think that the reality is all planning for 2021 for us and for, you know, every other business in America has to have an asterisk next to it in terms of what the course of the virus is going to be.
All right. One of the other things he did mention as well, Rob Manfred, is he is very much a proponent of continuing with a couple of the rule changes that were instituted this year. The biggest one being the extra inning rule, where they put a runner on second base. In an effort, they're doing it this year because they want to get the games over as quickly as they can to limit exposure, et cetera, et cetera. But they've just liked the way that it's ended more games more quickly. Only two games. Now, each team played 60 games, so it's only about a third of the regular season. But only two games ended up going 13 innings this past regular season in Major League Baseball. And I think they like that. The games are long enough to begin with, let alone long extra innings. So he would like to see that instituted. Now, the Players Association would have to sign off on that, but I couldn't see a reason why the players would not want to agree to that.
They'll disagree just because they want to. My gut feeling on, I think we're headed for a major lockout in baseball, and I think baseball owners are looking and saying, listen, took hockey a whole year, and for kind of where we're at, and I don't know if they can have a season without fans anyway, this is going to be really interesting to watch. As far as a crowd last night, JR, they had 11,000, was it 300?
Yep.
Was that the allotted amount of tickets?
Yes.
Or,
I think it's limited to well, I want to say 20% or something or thereabouts.
Okay, so. Okay. So it's a 44,000 seat. So that would, I was just wondering, you had touched on that Kansas City game, the Chiefs game, that opener where they couldn't sell the allotted tickets, which kind of took me aback. And when I saw the numbers yesterday, I kind of wondered, but if it's 44,000, that's in around 25%. That makes sense.
Yep. Most of them were Dodger fans, by the way, who were at the game last night. Not sure if they came in from L.A. or there's a lot of displaced Californians who live in Texas, but yeah, Dodger fans ruled the day.
Interesting thing, too, about game one last night, and I'm not sure if he's going to do it for game two tonight, but Trevor Bauer was on YouTube, and it was just the camera on him, and he was just talking about the baseball game, talking about players in trouble. You know, you bet Kershaw's going to come up with a nice pitch here. In a nice Budweiser T-shirt, a nice large case of Budweiser right behind him, and then answering all the comments from the fans.
Nice.
But, hey, Angels would be nice to go to. Oh, yeah, I'd love to go to the Angels. Great team. Marlins would be great, too. Didn't say one bad thing about one team. He is out there just pushing.
Weren't people last week, Cameron, they were lobbying to come to Toronto, weren't they?
Oh, everybody.
Okay.
Oh, he had a great year this year. Unbelievable year this year. I mean, Trevor Bauer is outstanding. And, yeah, he has an extremely large social media presence. He is not shy with his opinions. his opinions can be very divisive among baseball fans. Yeah. But the bottom line is the guy can throw the ball. So he's going to get paid, and I think that's a great. I had no idea he was doing that. That's a great idea.
I got
idea.
Stuck on it for about 15 minutes, and then when it was just a me show. Okay,
is he doing it again tonight?
I hope so. I'll check it out, and hopefully there'll be a little bit more about the game rather than him. But that's what you tend to.
He's a big Trump guy as well,
guy.
Is he not?
I have no clue.
Yeah, and I remember he'd signed up for like Tinder, and he had his own account talking about himself. Pretty cocky fella. Is he the one that had the drone accident as well?
Yes. Are
we talking about him? Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
He's one of those guys where a lot of stuff is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of it is his own doing. Some of it just appears to be because he's in the middle of everything. Yeah. Anyway, Dodgers win game one. Game two will go tonight at 6:40. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get into the hockey news. Connor Brown's arbitration hearing is scheduled for tomorrow. We know the numbers. The Leafs, meanwhile, have settled with Ilya Mikheyev. So we'll get you caught up on all the hockey stuff, get into some football news as well as we carry on here on a Wednesday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
All right, welcome back. 6:44. You know what? Just went with my gut. Just went online, TSN1200.ca, did my football picks for Week 7, which kicks off tomorrow night with an epic showdown. The 1-5 Giants, the 1-4-1 Eagles. What many are saying could be the game of the year. Or it could be the game of this Thursday night, because it is the only game that is scheduled for tomorrow night. Anyway, we'll have the game for you, but get your picks in, more importantly, to us at tsn1200.ca for Week 7. Again, it's a new game every week, absolutely free to enter. We do it straight up. There's no odds or anything like that. You get more right than anybody else. Make sure you fill out the tiebreaker, very important. You win our weekly prize of a $150 gift certificate, courtesy of our good friends at the Baton Rouge Steakhouse and Bar. All right, hockey news. The Leafs headed off an arbitration hearing with Ilya Mikheyev last night by getting a 2-year contract agreement with him, which will pay him $1.65 million per season. He had asked for $1 million, he had asked for $2.7 million from the arbitrator. The Leafs had offered $1 million. That was a significant difference. They sawed off pretty much right in the middle, or pretty close to. Mikheyev, by the way, had 8 goals and 23 points in 39 games, had his season cut, at least initially short, by a cut wrist, a kind of a freak injury where he was cut by a skate. He came back, did play in the playoffs. By all accounts, was a very good foot soldier for Toronto at a low cost, and now they've got him signed on for 2 more years. So they head off arbitration with Mikheyev.
Yeah, 26 years old, 1.1 this year, JR, then pumps up to just over $2 million the following year. Interesting backstory as well, as he was a free agent and in a team like Toronto trying to find whoever you can. It was actually contact with Mike Babcock, I think, over the course of a year, texting, trying to get him in. And boy, I was really impressed with him last year. And all of a sudden he went down that shift of not having enough size, and he's kind of a foot soldier. So, that's a nice award for him and some fixed costs for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, and he will, in all likelihood, skate on the third line. And for Toronto, listen, it's all about getting they've got such a top-heavy roster with a lot of money going out the door at the top of the roster that they need decent players who don't make a lot of money. And Mikheyev absolutely fits that to a T. I think that's I agree with you. I think he's a really effective player. And as they would say in the business, a digestible number.
Yeah, no, it is. And the trick for any of these arbitrations, the cases you look at, which is unique to what Ottawa's facing, you know, here's a player that's a restricted free agent. You sign a couple-of-year deal, whatever position he's in then as far as status. But in the case of Connor Brown, the tricky part here is that, hey, it's 1 year. You basically go to arbitration, you get the award, and then if you're Connor Brown's camp, you walk out the door. So that makes it a little trickier than a restricted free agent.
Yeah. So Connor Brown's arbitration hearing is scheduled for tomorrow. There were five scheduled for this week. This was the first week of 3 weeks of arbitration hearings. Five scheduled for this week. The first four have now been settled before it even got to a hearing. The Sens and Connor Brown are still on the schedule for tomorrow. Now, the Leafs were scheduled to be today, so, I mean, they got to a deal last night. Things can, talks can still happen, and a deal can still be agreed to, which will head off a hearing. But at this point, judging by the numbers from yesterday, and I'll ask you this, the Sens offered $2.25 million to Brown. He asked for $4.8 million. That's a significant difference, $2.6 million, the difference between the ask and the offer. Do you think it's possible for the two sides to come to a deal ahead of tomorrow, based on how wide that
well,
is?
Well, yeah, no, I don't factor a ton into that because, hey, you're coming in, and from the club side, it's 2.2, you present your case, and if you're the, you know, Jeff Jackson, the Connor Brown camp, you go 4.8, you go high. The arbitrator can decide anything in between. What I just don't know, and nobody has confirmed or said, I don't know what offers, I don't know what exchanges. My gut feeling is that when it's been sitting this long, that they won't end up getting a deal done, but I really have no idea. There's no way to react to it. And just because of the way the numbers weighed in, you know, that tells me certainly that the Brown camp is looking for a multi-year deal, and I'll say a guesstimate around $4 million, but that's all it is. And no one has said to me, hey, this is what the Sens have offered, this is what the ask is. All we know is that a contract has not gotten done, and with this amount of time and kind of looking at the Sens' history here, I'd say there's a pretty good chance they're going to arbitration.
Well, they don't have a bad history when it comes to heading off arbitration. Last 13 cases that have gone to arbitration, 10 have been settled before it actually got to a hearing. Now, the last one they had was with Cody Ceci a couple of years ago, in which he was awarded $4.3 million a year. So the last time they had one, it did eventually happen, an arbitration hearing.
But under the Stone one, you handed yes. him what he would have gotten in
yeah,
arbitration.
Technically, it didn't go to a hearing. Yeah, you gave him what he wanted because, yeah. as Pierre Dorion told yeah. him at the time, we don't want to get into a you-know-what throwing session, nor do you want that. So let's agree on this one-year term. We'll give you pretty much what you want, and then we'll have tons of time to come to a new deal. Yeah. And as we know, they never did come to a new deal.
No, and as far as Connor Brown, I would say from the club side, hey, listen, we brought you over last year. You had a real nice year. The 2 years previous, you were playing down in the Toronto lineup. Where do you stack up? And I know a lot of people were weighing in yesterday on not tying up long-term contracts and a bunch of money, which, as I said, I'm not talking about 5x5, but if they get a 4-year deal with him, keep it around $4 million. This idea that every young player coming out of entry level is going to be a star and handed over all this money, one of the things you need here, as we've said, building blocks are people. People that come to practice, that drive practice, people that on the ice do things properly. And I'm not talking about a guy that makes like 15 points. Like, this guy's going to be a 40-point guy. And I know it's also fixed cost, but think of in relation to what Tampa Bay was missing. They go out and get Coleman and Goudreau, and you look at their stats here, and I know they're on favorable contracts. Had to give up first-round picks. Like these components, and then the other part of, hey, I like Ottawa's future, but to get out of this swirl of losing, you also need some character, and you need some pretty good leadership. So I'm just a little surprised, not to mention DJ Smith, obviously loves him from the Toronto days, that they haven't been able to figure out a deal here.
Connor Brown was a guest with you and I way back in August. This was when he was shucking a new stick. You still got to, they actually sent you one, right? Sherwood,
well,
what is it?
Well, Sherwood, I don't even know what it is. It's just Sherwood.
But it had a name.
Well, yeah, I can't remember. They sent a couple and ended up giving them to Mira's boys. So they tried them out and they've been good. Had to switch one in for a goalie stick. But no, it's a nice brand.
All right. So anyway, he was on with us to, in part to shuck the stick, but of course we got into some hockey talk with him. And here is Connor Brown talking about, at that point, what was the hopes of being able to continue with the Sens.
You want to play for a team that you fit into, and I feel like I fit in pretty good with Ottawa, and you know, the style of hockey to play and just an up-and-coming team. And, you know, I enjoyed the role I had, which was an expanded role from what I had in Toronto there. So, you know, I tried to do the most with it. So, you know, all the other stuff with term and dollars, everything will sort itself out. But, you know, most importantly, it's just a fit, I think.
16 goals and 43 points for Connor Brown. So if they had been able to complete the season, he would have been in and around or close to 20 goals and in all likelihood nudging close to 50 points or thereabouts, which 20 goals and 50 points, that gets you, that probably gets you closer to $5 million on the free agent market these days. Now, again, numbers may be skewed a little bit high based on where we're at with the budget and the pandemic. I understand all that part of it, but those are pretty decent numbers. Now, the argument from some people, because I kind of went back and forth with some people yesterday, because, listen, the Nikita Zaitsev part of all of this is an anchor to that deal. They made the deal to bring in Nikita Zaitsev, who had five more years left on his contract. Connor Brown was part of that deal, and Cody Ceci left. Well, Cody Ceci, all obligations the Toronto Maple Leafs have contractually are now done.
Yeah.
Cody Ceci has walked out the door. Now, they didn't get anything for him. They got the year out of him, and he's now walked out the door. They also do not have Nikita Zaitsev for four more years at $4.5 million.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I was making the point of, well, if you let Connor, you know, if you're not going to come to an agreement with Connor Brown, you're going to trade him away for what, a prospect or a second-round pick? You've essentially traded, because Cody Ceci went with a third-rounder.
Yeah, exactly.
You've essentially traded a third for a second and four more years of Nikita Zaitsev at $4.5 million a year. Sens have made some good deals. That is not a very good deal at all as it sits right now. So that's the reason I don't really understand this idea of moving on from Connor Brown.
Yeah.
He's everything you want in a hockey player. I mean, no one is going to dispute that.
No.
He is a very good hockey player. Yeah. Do not break the bank for him, but I can't think that he's asking to break the bank.
But we don't know that, and that's the one part I'm cautious of. I have no idea. I don't know what he's asking for. But this
he's asked in arbitration for $4.8 million, so correct me if I'm wrong, and you negotiated far more contracts than I ever have on a multi-year deal. He's not asking for more than $4.8 million if that's what he's asking for in a one-year deal.
No, and he could be asking for on a multi-year deal, I want to say considerably less, but might look at Foley's number. So no, for sure. So it's not a five times five. And this is also part of, I'm more saying when you plan this, okay, last summer, think about the Toronto Maple Leafs. What did they have to do with Patrick Marleau? They had to attach a first-round pick on a one-year deal, JR, to get out of salary cap hell, and they ended up Carolina buys him out. You took on Zaitsev's 5 years on a contract nobody thought you could get rid of. They didn't have to pick up a dollar, and now, and all I would have said at the time, I would have thought in your long-term planning, the logic would have been, okay, this is Zaitsev, the coach loves him. Now, they should have done their homework on kind of everything going on with the fella, but in the case of Brown, that, hey, we're bringing this guy in. This is a big part of it because he's part of our future. That's all. I'm not saying, to justify keeping Zaitsev, that should have been the plan when you brought this guy over. I mean, you're letting the Toronto, you know, that contract would have been attached, would you agree, with a first-round pick last summer? If he was still on the books in Toronto, would you agree with Zaitsev?
Well,
to get out from underneath for 4 years versus
Marleau, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, he had to leave.
In how much trouble they were in with the cap.
Well, and just where his level of play was and the negativity around it. So it just surprises me. And like I said, if people want to keep with this idea of don't get tied into certain players, and
at some point, you got to sign some guys.
You just can't keep trucking guys out the door when they need a new contract.
Exactly.
And like I said, and it's an $80 million cap. If your owner who has said he wants to spend, if all of these entry-level players get to a spot where they're that good and you got to pay them, that's awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, a guy like Connor Brown is going to help a lot of these guys find their way to that, not to mention continue to build up your program, which right now has had a losing culture over the last 4 years.
Yeah, the argument, the counter-argument I got from some people who said, okay, yeah, it's a bad deal. Don't make a bad deal worse by tying yourself into a long-term contract with Connor Brown. You know, look at it as, you know, we made a bad deal. It's a sunk cost. We're stuck with Zaitsev for four more years. Don't add another 4 years of Connor Brown at $4 million a year.
But why wouldn't you at 27 years old and a good hockey player?
The point that some people are making is that Connor Brown is a third-line player, and that's all he is, and why are you paying? You know, you potentially you could have somebody coming up from Belleville, an Alex Formanton, who gives you a Connor Brown-like performance at this point, a far lesser cost.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is the counter-argument to
that. No, and I get that. And like I said,
I think a lot of people say, well, foot soldiers you can find anywhere, right?
Yeah.
Connor Brown you can find anywhere. Well, I beg to differ with that. Like, he is on the good... Are there a lot of foot soldiers? Absolutely. There's tons of them. Yeah. He's one of the good ones. He's a really good one for a lot of different reasons, both what he brings on the ice, but also he's a good Ontario boy. I think he was proud to be an Ottawa Senator this past year. Let's not forget, when they rolled out the new uniforms a couple of weeks ago, who were the two guys that were in town to do it for them? Yeah. Nick Paul, who actually lives here now, just bought a house here. And the other guy was Connor Brown, who, to my knowledge, I don't think is living here. He came up from Toronto. Maybe he's been here for, came up for a few days. But Connor Brown was the guy when they introduced the new uniforms. Yeah. And that says to me, well, you're asking him to, hey, this is our new look for the foreseeable future. Come in, guy that we don't really commit to for the long term. Yeah. Parts of it just don't add up to me.
Yeah, no, and I agree on that part of it. And like I said, I'm not. I just would have automatically, within hockey operations, we'd say to ourselves, listen, we're not taking on Connor Brown for 2 years in the Zaitsev deal. We're taking this on because we want Connor Brown to be part of our future. And if you didn't, JR, as far as planning, if you saw this, why weren't you trading this guy at the trade deadline last year? Like look at the Tampa Bay Lightning gave up first round picks for a guy like Goodrow and Coleman, and look at their stats now. The sandpaper part, although Connor Brown, like, hey, a little bit of planning here, guys. Like that's the part I don't understand. Is that, hey, that's fine if you've decided you've got so many good players and you don't want to sign the guy. Well, get out in front of this now. Maybe bring him back on a 1 year deal and flip him at the trade deadline this year. But it just thought from a culture standpoint and just for lots of other reasons that you would have put this into place. And I look at the surface after all the bluster and talk about DeMelo and Borowiecki, you'd have to explain to me why both of those contracts were not able to be accomplished by Ottawa. And I put Connor Brown now, without knowing the numbers, in the exact same thing. But I guess we won't know until he signs somewhere.
Yeah. And again, we're saying all this. There is the possibility that the two sides, that they now have a hard deadline of whenever it is, 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Yeah.
If they don't come to a deal, then it goes to an arbitrator. And there's no more, hey, we have a hearing. We think we're going to lose, so let's try and make a deal. Once they go to the hearing, they have to settle with whatever the arbitrator decides. That being said, sometimes when you have a deadline, that forces the two sides to actually try to come to an agreement. So that could happen.
Yeah, my gut feeling, and again, I have no information. I'm not feeling it, but you're absolutely right. And if people are tuning in right now and asking why we're talking so much about Connor Brown, you look at the sports calendar, and it's October 21st. We got nothing else going.
Well, I agree with you, and that you say that in good humor. Yeah. I say it's, I do say in all seriousness, it's an important debate based on where Ottawa has been for the past several seasons. And it may be, is he the biggest star on the team? He's not. But if we're being told that there is a plan and it's 112 pages long, I don't say that there's a specific page 67 is dedicated to Connor Brown's future with the Ottawa Senators, but it's all part of a bigger picture. Do we have the Pierre Dorion clip?
In this rebuild, all these players are staying.
You know, like that's what we were told, right? Yeah.
Well, Boro was going to be a send for life.
Like
what
everybody
there?
That was being carted out of town, okay, that they're tearing it down to the studs, okay, building from the foundation up or whatever. Well, if they keep kind of just trading away these guys, these what you would think, and I'm not saying he's a foundational piece, but if he's just outside the core, he's the type of player you'd want to. That's just it's the Connor Brown thing is part of a bigger picture thing with the Ottawa Senators of their inability right now to, for whatever reason, keep players.
Yeah, and it is both a sign to me, and not near to Brady Tkachuk, but a sign of the player wants to be part of your program, and you also want to have him here. This was, again, also the trade-off of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, again, I know he mixes around, but you look at their lineup after moving Kadri, some of the things they had last year, this is the types of player in person they were actually missing. Now they've gone out and gone old and local, but again, this was kind of the whole idea. Well, we don't want to trade Connor Brown, but there's no way we're going to get Zaitsev off the books unless we had something pretty good to it.
Yeah, and these are the Connor Browns, if the Ottawa Senators ascend to where they hope to in the next 2 to 3 seasons, and a lot, because you're absolutely right, not every one of these prospects that they have is going to turn out to be what they think. You know, there are guys that will fall off and will not be. But if the majority of them do, or even if some of them do, and they become a good team and a playoff team, and then eventually maybe a team that's going to win a round or two, and then eventually in your wildest dreams, a team that could compete and get, 2 to 3 and maybe get to a Stanley Cup final. These are the types of players that you need on your team. This is the types of players the Toronto Maple Leafs, as you just said, have realized that they need to have. They're going about it in a different way, getting old guys on small contracts. But you got this guy in-house. You got Mark Borowiecki in-house.
Yeah.
If you have to go out and then re-trade for them 2 years from now, the trade deadline, you end up paying way more than you need to in terms of draft picks or prospects or whatever when you already got the guy here.
Yeah, and that's my point. If Borowiecki 2 years at $2 million, DeMello 4 years at $3 million, I'm good with both of those. If it's four times four for Connor Brown, which I'm just kind of guessing, I'm good with that. Mixed in with my young players because, again, and I'll go back to, and people are looking at the defense and saying, I like the way the contracts stack up. Man, if you want to support your young players and start to integrate some of these young blue liners, it's more difficult than forwards. Boy, you better have some better players around him. And as I said, with Thomas Chabot, all of a sudden there's going to be a little more pressure this year, JR. It's 8x8. And last year he was okay. He hadn't played a zillion minutes. You have to put the right pieces in place to bring these kids along to support them. And that's not signing old guys. And hey, Connor Brown is still a young player. He's also shown last year, like he did in his rookie year, that he can mix around your lineup and no issue with him playing in your top six and can be a real nice complement to some of your higher end skill.
Now, I'd like him to use those new sticks he was shucking in the summer to score just a few more goals because other than Brady Tkachuk, there was probably not a guy in the team who had more high-end opportunities than he had. Listen, a lot of those he did himself. How many shorthanded breakaways did he end up having? We'd like to see a little more, but 16 goals, still not bad at the end of the day. Anyway, thoughts on that are always welcome. Got a pile of texts. We'll get to those in the next hour at 12-1200 when you do text us. Standard messaging rates apply. You can tweet at us at TSN1200, and we always keep the phone lines open for you at 750-1200. We'll talk more about that and all the hockey news with Pierre McGuire when he joins us after 8. And general manager of the 67s, James Boyd, will join us after 9. There has been an outbreak related to COVID-19 surrounding the Ottawa 67. So we're going to get the latest from the team's general manager on that coming up after 9 o'clock. As we continue along, latest news on the way from 580 CFRA and a rundown of the scoreboard, including the details of the Dodgers. Game 1 World Series win is on the way next on TSN 1200.